I'm Jeremy Scahill from Dropsite News, dropsitenews.com. This weekend, there is going to be another exchange of captives. Some are going to come out of Gaza and be returned to the Israelis. We're also expecting scores of Palestinian captives. The last round, prisoners who were released from the Palestinian side included women and children that have been held by Israel. As we wait for this next round of exchanges, the Israeli government and the Israeli military have launched a significant attack on the West Bank, centering on Jenin. There is a lot to talk about, and we are going to be joined by a leading Palestinian political figure in just a moment. But first, I want to welcome my colleague, Sharif Abdelkaddous. Sharif, good morning.
Good morning, Jeremy. Good to be here.
And we are joined right now by Dr. Mustafa Barghouti. He is the General Secretary of the Palestinian National Initiative. That's a Palestinian political party. He's also been deeply involved with discussions about what is going to happen in the immediate future in Gaza, as well as the long-term future as well. Dr. Barghouti joins us from Ramallah in the occupied West Bank. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
Dr. Barghouti, thanks for joining us. You're talking to us from Ramallah in the occupied West Bank. The Israeli military and security forces are conducting a large-scale operation dubbed Iron Wall that started just after the ceasefire in Gaza went into effect. The most brutal part of this operation is being conducted in Jenin and the Jenin refugee camp, where airstrikes and drones are being fired on the camp. You have soldiers bulldozing large areas of the city and the camp, and as many as 2,000 families have been displaced already. And across the West Bank, we see settlers rampaging, we see checkpoints being closed across the entire West Bank, and flying checkpoints being set up, places like El Khalil, Hebron being completely sealed off. Can you talk to us about what is happening right now and put it in context of this coming as the ceasefire in Gaza went into effect?
Well, what you see in the West Bank is an escalation of what used to happen anyhow, but now it's a very serious escalation. It's like a war, actually, that is conducted against the Palestinian people in the West Bank. And it's a very serious violation of every international law when the occupying power is conducting a war on occupied people, on civilian population, basically, in occupied territories. They're using, as you said, airstrikes, they're using tanks, they're using all kinds of weapons. And the target is not only Jenin, it's actually all of the West Bank, but the attacks are concentrating a lot on Jenin refugee camp, where an act of ethnic cleansing is taking place. They are forcing all the civilian population living in the refugees in the refugee camp Jenin to get out of their homes and be expelled out of their homes and houses. And then the Israeli army is engaging in destruction of many houses and burning many houses, as we can see on videos that we are receiving from there. But besides that, there are also military actions taking place in various villages and various towns in the West Bank. Yesterday, they were in Kabatia attacking people there. They were in several other villages in Yamun and other places in Jenin. And now the whole West Bank is put under terrible siege, where Israel has increased its military checkpoints from 760 to 900, including gates that shut off completely villages, towns, cities. And they have completely harmed the freedom of movement on all of the West Bank, which means people are unable to get to their jobs, to their fields. People who are sick are unable to attend to proper hospitals. And the Israeli illegal settlers, as you mentioned, are also continuing their attacks from time to time, attacking communities, burning houses, also burning cars, and making the roads of the West Bank completely unsafe, because they would be attacking vehicles that are driving between different West Bank cities and villages with rocks and sometimes with shooting. So it's a very dangerous situation, unprecedented since 2002, when the Israeli army reinvaded all of the cities and the villages of the West Bank.
This this operation and this attack and invasion by the Israelis, that we understand from news reports coming out of Israel and Israeli political figures like Bezalel Smotrich, that this major operation in Jenin was conceived of in the discussions with the Israeli cabinet on the eve of signing this ceasefire with Hamas and exchange of captives. And I want to ask you about this timing, because there's also indications, and Netanyahu himself has said this, that he had essentially a side deal with the Americans that boiled down to, this is just really a phase one deal. And if Israel decides it doesn't want to continue this diplomatic process with Hamas, they can resume the war, but also that they are going to escalate significantly their attacks against the West Bank. Donald Trump's advisors, even though Trump played a clearly decisive role in the timing of this ceasefire deal, have also indicated that they're fine with Israel resuming the war against Gaza. Trump's administration incoming is stacked with people who have said there's no such thing as a Palestinian, no such thing as the West Bank. Talk about the timing of this, the relation to the Gaza deal, and these reports that there's a side deal between Netanyahu and the Americans.
Well, we all know that Netanyahu is running a fascist government in Israel, and with many fascist ministers like Smotrich and Ben-Gvir. And Smotrich does not shy away from calling himself a fascist homophobe, as a matter of fact. And Smotrich said it very clearly in the very beginning of the work of this government. He described the Israeli strategy, being the minister of finance and also the minister in charge of the West Bank, of the occupied West Bank. He said that Israel will enhance its settlement building and the spread of settlers all over the West Bank so that Palestinians would lose any hope of a state of their own, and then would have to choose between leaving, which is ethnic cleansing, or accepting a life of subjugation to Israelis, which is eternal apartheid, or dying, which is exactly what they have done in Gaza, genocide. So this is the Israeli plan. And to satisfy Smotrich and others in his fascist government, Netanyahu had to give a chance for a ceasefire in Gaza for one purpose, because he wants to bring back the Israeli prisoners. But once he gets them back, he has promised all these ministers that he will get back to war again. Ben-Gvir was not convinced, and he was even against the temporary ceasefire, and he left the government. Now there are rumors that Smotrich is about to leave the government as well, which will put Netanyahu in a very difficult position. But at the same time, Netanyahu is trying to convince Smotrich to stay in the government by executing a horrible war on the West Bank, expanding the war in the West Bank. Of course, the most decisive element here is the United States administration. Biden's government was nothing but a complicit and participant and supporter of the war crimes in Gaza, including genocide. Biden himself could have stopped this war if he wanted to, but he didn't want to. And he was complicit in this genocide. And now Trump forced Netanyahu to have a temporary ceasefire. But whether he will support a continuous ceasefire or not, that's a different story. So it's a very risky situation. And Israel would not have dared to go as far as committing genocide in Gaza and then expanding the war into the West Bank if it wasn't for the complicit behavior of the Western governments, mostly. I'm not putting everybody in the same basket, but it's Western governments who allowed Israel to do that and provided him with military equipment, with aid, with support. United States government provided him with almost $40 billion of tons of explosives and military weapons. That's the situation we live in. And maybe in one word, one can say that Gaza has exposed the very failure of the whole so-called international law and international regimen that prevailed after the Second World War.
Dr. Barghouti, I want to ask you about the future of a governing authority in Gaza, in Palestine, There's been talk of national consensus government. Many are skeptical after so many years of failed reconciliation efforts that this can actually be achieved and a unified leadership can be formed to actually govern and confront Israel. You were involved in talks in Doha with multiple Palestinian factions. You have said that Hamas does not want to govern going forward. Can you elaborate on that and what that would mean?
Well, before we went to Doha, we were in Moscow during this war, horrible war, and we were in Beijing as well. And we had two agreements, both of which I personally drafted. And the Beijing agreement provides a very good solution by to get Palestinian unity. It provides for the establishment of a national consensus government that is accepted by everybody. And that would maintain the unity between West Bank and Gaza and not allow the separation of Gaza from West Bank, something that Netanyahu wants to prevent the establishment eventually of a Palestinian state. And that agreement speaks about an interim government that would be temporary so that it can take care of the reconstruction of Gaza, maintain the unity of West Bank and Gaza, and build the road, open the road for in preparation for future Palestinian elections, something we didn't have in 20 years. What we aim at here is to show the world that we as Palestinians are able and capable of running our own life in Gaza and everywhere. And we don't need any foreign government to come and govern us as Israel wants to suggest, because what they're planning to do is to keep the Israeli occupation of Gaza and bring in some kind of foreign force to take care of internal security while the Israeli army maintains the overall military control in Gaza, and then create some kind of collaborator system that collaborates with Israeli occupation. That's their game. And we shouldn't allow that by creating this national consensus and unity government. Hamas told us more than once that they don't want to be in the government or be the government, but the government has to be accepted by everybody. And I agree with that. No government can function in Gaza unless it is accepted by all parties. And what we need here is to stand up to the Israeli very aggressive measures. The risk here is that you have elements in Trump's government who are aiming at the total annexation of the West Bank to Israel. And that's the explanation of things like that were said by people like Huckabee, who is Mike Huckabee, who's going to be the Israeli ambassador to Israel, the American ambassador to Israel. He said that Palestinians don't exist, that Palestinians are an invention to steal away land from Israel. This is the kind of mentality of people who are with Trump now. And that's why it's a very dangerous moment in the life of the Palestinian people.
Right. But it must be said that soon after this initial phase of the ceasefire went into effect, Mahmoud Abbas, the Palestinian Authority president, issued a press release of his own saying that the Palestinian Authority, under his leadership, is ready to assume administrative control of Gaza. You mentioned the talks in Beijing, and you also talked about the recent meetings in Doha. Those were organized at the invitation of Hamas in agreement with all of the groups that were represented there, yourself as well. Fatah was not there, the party, the ruling party of Mahmoud Abbas. He is getting very old. He's recently had Palestinian forces attacking in Jenin as well, arresting people. They have shut down Al Jazeera network. Abbas is incredibly unpopular. What does it mean then that you have Mahmoud Abbas on the heels of now participating in this siege, state of siege in the West Bank, saying he's going to be in control of Gaza? And meanwhile, you and other factions are meeting in Doha. It seems like there's a real problem there.
Of course there is a problem, and the problem is the continuation of this internal division. And the whole Palestinian Authority operation in Jenin camp was a big mistake, and it was a failure. And if the Palestinian Authority wants to take over the responsibilities of Gaza, they're most welcome. But the Israelis are not allowing them to do that. Not us, not even Hamas. Israel is saying no place for not only Hamas, but no place also for the Palestinian Authority, and no place for a unity government. So in my opinion, nobody will respect us as Palestinians, including the Palestinian Authority, unless we show our strength, our power. And the only source of strength for anybody today in Palestine is our unity. And that applies also to the Palestinian Authority. Nobody will take them seriously unless we have a national unified leadership, unless we have a unified national government. That's what we want. And they have to understand that, because without that, they will get nothing. And if some of them think that this, the way they are behaving, will make Trump accept them, they are mistaken. Trump accepts and deals with only strong entities. He doesn't respect people who are weak. And at this moment, the way to getting strength is through Palestinian unity. Besides one very important point, which is that we haven't had elections for 20 years. And it is the right of the Palestinian people to have free democratic elections and choose their leaders freely and democratically. And that's, in my opinion, the key point to establish change in political system in Palestine and to open the road and the door for a separation of powers, for an effective legislative body, for an effective judiciary system, and to organize our internal affairs democratically while we are struggling to have our freedom and the end of occupation.
This weekend, we're supposed to see another swap of Israelis being held in Gaza with Palestinian captives, even though we saw just over this past week dozens of people be arrested across the West Bank, more than were released last week. This is a very fragile ceasefire. There is supposed to be this weekend as well a withdrawal from the Netzarim corridor completely, and Palestinians are expected to be allowed to cross from south to north this weekend, starting on Sunday. And negotiations are supposed to restart about phase two. Are you aware of how these negotiations are going forward? Do you have any hope that this next phase will continue after this first 42-day phase?
I hope so. But first of all, look, the idea, the issue of people returning from the south to the north is the most vital issue here, because it defeats the purpose of the Israeli aggression in Gaza. The whole aggression on Gaza, this whole 15 months, during these 15 months, was about one thing: ethnic cleansing of the Palestinian population of Gaza. Netanyahu did not hide his intentions. He all the time spoke about transferring Palestinians in the Gaza Strip by force, by killing them, by bombardment to Egypt, to Sinai. And he failed. And the people showed great heroism in staying steadfast on their land. And I always said that maintaining the population, Palestinian population in the north, is the defeat to Israel. And regardless of the fact that Netanyahu practically destroyed four cities in the north completely, he destroyed Jabalia, Jabalia camp, Beit Lahia, and Beit Hanun. But resistance did not disappear. And people were resisting and fighting back after 15 months of destruction. So now he is forced to allow them to get back if he wants to get his captives. And they will get back on Sunday. And that will be the ultimate defeat of the Israeli plans, because it means that the whole goal of ethnic cleansing was not did not materialize. Now, why Israel accepts a ceasefire now? Yes, Trump is an important factor here, because he did what Biden failed to do, which is exercise some pressure on Israel. But that's not the only factor. The main factors are the fact that Israel has had an unprecedented level of human losses. And second, they had to conduct this longest war in their history. and still they didn't achieve their goals. Let me remind you that they defeated three Arab armies and occupied all of Sinai in Egypt, which is three times the size of Israel, and West Bank and Gaza and the Golan Heights in less than 4 days in 1967. Now they've been fighting for 15 months and they couldn't defeat the Palestinian resistance, regardless of how moderate the abilities of this resistance is. So you have human losses, you have an extended war that is unprecedented in its length, you have an Israeli economy that is crumbling, you have at least 1 million Israelis who have left Israel during this war, and that all of these factors are, of course, exercise pressure on Netanyahu, besides, of course, the pressure of families of captives that demand a deal and demand the release of their captives. So all these factors are affecting Netanyahu's decision. On the other hand, he's afraid to lose his government. And this man is a very selfish man. But at the same time, there are limits to how far he can go. So we are in a process. We are in struggle. Everything is possible. But I do believe that our unity, our steadfastness, our resilience will hopefully prevail. And for us, the most important thing now is to stop the genocide in Gaza, the genocide that has taken away the lives of at least 70,000 people, including at least 18,000 children. This has to stop. And our struggle will continue because our goal is not ceasefire. Our goal is liberation, is freedom, is the end of occupation, the end of apartheid, the end of the settler colonial project that has destroyed our lives as Palestinians for the last 76 years.
One last question, Dr. Barghouti. I know you follow also American politics very, very closely, and the election that Trump emerged victorious in and his role, as you indicated, in the ceasefire deal. He's an erratic person. He's a transactional person. He also is very concerned about his ego, his legacy. He very much wants normalized relations between Saudi Arabia and Israel. And the Saudi foreign minister has also been making statements saying that the Iranians should try to make a deal with Trump. They're sort of serving informally as kind of one of Trump's negotiators in the region. But the stakes are very high also for the Palestinians if the Saudis normalize relations with Israel and they do it without any commitment that is enforceable about a Palestinian state. That would be a huge domino because probably other countries are going to follow Saudi Arabia. How do you navigate this moment with Trump, a very unpredictable character, who also has said unexpected positive things, for instance, about Mahmoud Abbas? I mean, there's a lot of contradictions in Trump. How do you approach navigating this moment where, on the one hand, Trump could just give Netanyahu carte blanche like Biden did to do whatever he wants? On the other hand, he may have a different idea of how he, quote unquote, makes a deal in the Middle East.
Well, as you said, Trump is a very unpredictable person, and he is also authoritarian in the sense that even when his aides are so biased to Israel, if he feels something he should do that would serve his own interest, his personal interest, he will do it. He will not listen to his advisors. But at the end of the day, he is an American president in an American administration that classically and historically have been totally biased to Israel, and we don't expect something different here. And his previous administration was talking about the deal of the century, and the deal of the century was about transforming the whole idea of Palestinian statehood into an act of deceit by making it clusters of pantostans and ghettos that have no sovereignty, no control over their borders, of natural resources, of water supplies, of airspace, of electromagnetic space. It was a joke. And that joke would have included giving Israel 30% of the West Bank to annex their settlements. Now maybe he wants to give them all of the West Bank, I don't know. But regarding the normalization was used as an instrument to enforce a solution on Palestinians that does not satisfy our needs or our future. And it was used as an instrument to liquidate completely the Palestinian issue. Don't forget that Trump was the one who cut off support to UNRWA before the idea of eliminating UNRWA was on the scene. So The Saudis have told us and keep repeating publicly and in meetings that they will not normalize with Israel unless there is a path to a Palestinian state. Now, and unless there is calm in the region, as they said. And when they were asked, what do you mean by calm in the region? They said, Israeli complete withdrawal from Gaza. These are the declared position of Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia has a certain strong leverage with Trump. They're promising him a huge amount of investment in the United States. If they stick to their positions, we'll see. But let me tell you something, as a Palestinian who has followed all this situation for so many years and who have witnessed the decline of the support of the Arab and Muslim countries to Palestinian cause, and who have seen a terrible, terrible, terrible lack of support during the attack on Gaza, and a terrible position of many, many countries in the international community. And still we didn't break. I tell you frankly, if all Arab countries normalize with Israel, this will not stop the Palestinian struggle. We will not stop, and we will continue. Because honestly speaking, there is nothing much to lose. And we have to survive through our struggle and our continuous. And I don't see the Palestinian issue anymore as a pure Arab or Islamic issue. It's an issue of humanity. It's an issue of of all the forces in the world that are supporting the rights of the people to be free. As Nelson Mandela has said once, the Palestinian cause has become the number one cause of liberty or freedom worldwide. And I think we should look at it in this way. We don't want normalization. We'll struggle against it till we get our freedom. But if it happens, it will not stop our struggle.
Dr. Mustafa Barghouti, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Dr. Mustafa Barghouti is the president of the Palestinian National Initiative, a leading Palestinian political figure, as well as a physician. And that does it for this program. Thank you, Sharif, as well.
Thank you, Jeremy. Thank you, Dr. Barghouti.
Shukran.
And that does it for this program. I'm Jeremy Scahill from Dropsite News, dropsitenews.com. On behalf of everyone at Dropsite News, we want to thank you very much for being with us. If you want to make a tax-deductible contribution to Dropsite News, you can go to our website, dropsitenews.com. Until next time, with Sharif Abdelkaddous, I'm Jeremy Scahill. Thank you so much.